There's only two sexes. It's literally in our DNA and our chromosomes.
They identify themselves as a third gender.
There are only three sexes.
I was born in the wrong body.
We're also seeing the consequences of what happens when we deny basic biological truths. We're seeing men competing in women's sports.
That has, you know, very serious consequences for fellow competitors.
There's a lead up from police.
I mean, knows that he's biologically male, but has decided to suppress that and continue punching women in the ring at the highest level.
Hello, I'm Fraser Myers, Deputy Editor of Spikes. I'm absolutely thrilled to be joined by Colin Wright, evolutionary biologist and editor of the Reality's Last Stand Substack. Welcome.
Thanks for having me here.
Colin, we live in a world, incredible as it sounds, I'm going to ask you to explain whether biological sex is on a spectrum or whether it's binary. And whether humans can change sex, because it seems an oddly contentious topic at the moment.
Yeah. It's really contentious and it shouldn't be. I mean, we've all known since we've existed as a species that there's only two sexes. It's literally in our DNA and our chromosomes. I mean, fundamentally, when we talk about the sex of an individual, it boils down to like the type of sex cell or gamete, sperm or ova, that you have the function to produce. So just based on that alone, there's only two types of gametes that a person could make. There's only sperm or ova. There's no third, so there can't be a third sex. And that really is like the crux of when biologists say sex is binary, that's what we're referring to. Sure, people, their bodies are different shapes. They can have traits that, you know, that do exist on a certain spectra. But if we're talking about sex itself, no, there's only two sexes that anybody can be.
And obviously this is denied by a lot of people, but not just by activists. There's a lot of science denial even in universities. I mean, how widespread do you think that denialism is?
It's incredibly widespread. It started in kind of the culture, and you got New York Times talking about it, Scientific American writing about this stuff, but those were like popular outlets and news outlets. But in 2015, the thing that got me really out of my lab and just really starting to write about this problem is the Nature magazine, the number one most prestigious journal in the world. It's UK based, I believe. Published an article titled Sex Redefined, and it said that the sex binary is outdated and most biologists think it's a broader spectrum than that, and it's just fundamentally untrue. And then since then, in the last decade, we've just had a flood of similar papers coming out trying to decouple sperm and ova from being like the foundational universal organizing principle of what it means to be male and female. And sadly, they use a lot of crazy arguments and that just have no... They don't make contact with reality, and it's just not true that some new discovery has been made that has decoupled our gametes from male and female.
And what are some of those arguments? I mean, people will be familiar with the sort of more activist slogans around trans women are women or people being born in the wrong body. But what do people, I suppose, posing as being scientific, what kind of arguments do they try to make?
There's a lot. So, I mean, one that I hear a lot, most people do, is they'll have this idea. And there's like a true version of the statement, but they misinterpret it. Like the idea that sex is determined by chromosomes.
Right.
That's true, but they're confused about what it means for sex to be determined by versus how sex is defined. Mm-hmm. So in biology, when we talk about sex being determined by chromosomes, it just means that the chromosomes that you have, cause you to develop, you know, in utero down a pathway that will result in being a male or a female. But there's other species like turtles. They don't use chromosomes. They use like temperature, incubation type that. So there's a diverse ways that sex is determined.
Yeah.
But sex is always defined in any species, by the size of whether you're producing sperm or ova. So that's one. And then people also they'll point to individuals with differences of sexual development that have ambiguous looking genitalia or something and say like, well, this person looks kind of ambiguous. It's not very binary. Well, but people who, to the degree that they do have ambiguous looking sex characteristics, there's still not a third sex because it's not a functional. There's no third sex cell in between sperm or ova that they would be able to produce. So there's still two sexes, even if some people might be difficult to place.
And where does someone like Iman Khalif, the gold medalist Olympian boxer, fit into this? Because there is, on one side, there'll be an insistence that Khalif is a woman. On the other side, straightforwardly a man. What is your take on that situation?
So there's a lot of ideological words being used to describe Iman Khalif. They'll say that Imam Khalif was, you know, assigned a female at birth and identifies as a woman. This makes her a cis woman. But what these fail to grasp is the fact that Imam Khalif has a difference of sexual development. It's called 5-ARD, which likely resulted in ambiguous genitals at birth, which resulted in the sex being incorrectly recorded as female at birth when this is actually a male individual. That's what this specific DSD does, this intersex condition, if you want to call it that. It makes, and especially in like developing countries, they don't have all this prenatal screening.
Yeah.
Some of these individuals, yeah, they get misrecorded at birth of what their sex is. But we shouldn't be taking that as like the final estimation of truth when it comes to sports. I mean, an error was made and an error can be corrected. So Imam Khalif is a male, has gone through male puberty, has internal testes, produces testosterone in the male range, and has no place playing in women's sports. Even if you can concede the fact that growing up, Imam was probably very confused, and we can be compassionate about that. Imam has taken two sex tests, has failed them both, has tried to suppress the results from being released. They were recently leaked. So at this point, you know, Imam knows that the sex that they are. So.
And obviously that has, you know, very serious consequences for fellow competitors because
especially in boxing. I mean, so they suppress the results. Imam knows that, he's biologically male, but has decided to suppress that and continue punching women in the ring at the highest level. So at some point, personal responsibility needs to come into this. Like there's some agency that this person has.
Absolutely. And what does it mean when someone might have, say, XXY chromosomes or, you know, different combinations that deviate from purely XX and XY? Is that similar to the DSD intersex conditions you're talking about? Or is that
slightly different? So they are DSDs. They're not intersex conditions. There's actually a distinction. Like an intersex condition is something that makes someone appear sexually ambiguous at birth. Like if you're a doctor holding up a baby and you're like, oh, I'm not quite so sure. A DSD is just any difference of sexual development. That's kind of hard to define. It can be like small differences and just the way you develop. But most DSDs, such as like if you're a man and you have XXY chromosomes, that's called Klinefelter syndrome. Your sex isn't ambiguous in any way. You can still father children. You might have, more breast development and you'll have some like feminine features on yourself, but you are still 100% male, just because your secondary sex characteristics might be atypical for a man. You're still biologically male. So there's all kinds of like chromosomal variation within the sexes. But a lot of people want to, or they, you know, it's politically, in their favor to try to misportray those chromosomal variations as independent sexes. But as long as those chromosomal variations don't result in creating a new type of gamete that's neither a sperm nor an egg, they're not additional sexes beyond male or female.
And is there such a thing as a male and female brain? Because that seems to be something that can be taken up by different sides in politics. You can have people saying that there are, you know, female oriented tasks that they should stick to. And you can have the sort of trans version that says this is a, you know, person born in the wrong body, wrong brain in the wrong body. What is your take on that?
So there's no such thing as like a male brain or a female brain. It's impossible to be born in the wrong body because we're not like born into bodies. We're an integrated whole. We develop, you know, whatever brain you happen to have and you're a male, you happen to have a brain that is in a male body. It's a male brain, I guess, if you want to call it that. Now brains, just like any other trait, exist, you know, it responds to hormones and you can have differences in how maybe masculinized or virilized these traits are. One trait you can see this in is people's hands, for instance. We know that hand and digit ratios respond to testosterone in the womb and also when you're going through puberty. And so you can say that, you know, you can be a man with very effeminate hands. You can be a woman with very masculine hands. Doesn't mean, you know, you literally have female hands if you have feminine hands. But, and so brains are just like any other organ or body trait we have. They can have, you can be a male and your brains can have sort of, you know, exist on, you know, slightly feminized, and you can be a woman who has slightly masculinized brain features. This is just all part of the natural variation of humans, and it probably results in them having, you know, sex atypical behaviors and things like that, but it doesn't mean there's a mismatch between their brain and their body. It doesn't mean they're born in the wrong body. It just means they're a unique individual who happens to just be non-conforming in certain ways.
And why do men have nipples? And can men breastfeed?
So men cannot breastfeed. I mean, you can take a lot of hormones that you can produce a substance that is very milk-like in very small amounts. Mm. To call it breast milk, it's, you know, it's missing a lot of like the nutrients that you would have in females who have like fully developed mammary glands and things like that. So we have nipples, men do. It's kind of a byproduct of how we develop. So being a male is something that evolved later in the history. I mean, in the ancient evolutionary history, there were no males. And so you had females that would give birth, and they, you know, they breastfed. And then, so during development, everyone kind of starts with a very similar body plan of having features with it. And then, you know, at some point we differentiate into male or female. And so males, it's easier to just have those features that are in the initial embryo and then just make them non-functional than it would be to totally rewire everything back and get rid of the nipples. Because evolution kind of has to work with what's already there to begin with. But then people are say, you know, there's other traits that females have that aren't necessarily like evolved for being a female. Like, and it's contentious, but people will bring up like, you know, like the female orgasm or something, where it's like there's high selection for it in males. And so there's like a byproduct that also, you know, happens in females as well. It's a big contentious area, but there's some like spillover and adaptations that are meant for one sex that kind of make their way over into another sex sometimes.
And you mentioned evolution there. I wanted to ask you about that because there is a sort of creeping wave of evolution denial coming about on the right. Possibly Tucker Carlson, maybe the most famous exponent of that. The case for evolution is pretty unimpeachable. Am I right in thinking? I don't think there's no alternative theory as to.
I mean, there's no alternative like scientific theory. There's people have religious disagreements, but I don't think they're anywhere in the realm of evidentiary base that we have for evolution.
And would it be right to say that, you know, since Darwin, many of the scientific discoveries we've made since have only added to the weight of evidence rather than undermined it or called it into question?
Absolutely. I mean, Darwin has started just like single sentences in his Origin of Species have spawned entire subfields within evolutionary biology. It's not to say that Darwin got everything right, but like the main structure of natural selection, of like variation followed by selection, that type of stuff, the framework that he built has been completely unimpeached since then, and it's been elaborated. And, you know, he even in his life, he added things like sexual selection because he had to explain, you know, how can you have these features that look like they should be selected against? Like, well, if it actually attracts more mates, then it can overcome, you know, getting eaten by predators. And, you know, his fields have just been expanded upon since then, and there's nothing that has undermined any of his foundational premises, which is actually shocking because Darwin had no idea of modern genetics at the time. He had a completely false idea of how inheritance actually worked. He's a truly remarkable person, and evolution is as strong as ever, no matter what Tucker Carlson happens to say.
And what do you think, what is the consequence of getting these things wrong or rejecting the evidence before our eyes, for instance, whether that's about biological sex or about evolution? Why is it so important to stand up for scientific truth here?
Well, these are like foundational aspects of humanity. We're biological creatures. We evolved. If you deny just the fundamental fact that we're the result of an unbroken chain of evolution and selection, you're not going to get right answers to a lot of questions. You're not going to be able to make effective medicines. You know, evolutionary medicine is really important. If you're asking questions about human behavior, why do people do this? Why do women are attracted to this and men? Why are attracted to certain types of careers? I mean, if you're not looking through an evolutionary lens, you're going to get the wrong answer. And that's one reason. So I used to speak out in defense of evolution a lot because it's a fundamental aspect of who we are. And then that's why I started speaking out against the whole sex denialism too, because it's maybe as fundamental as we're a sexually reproducing species. We have males and females. And we're also seeing the consequences of what happens when we deny basic biological truths. We're seeing men competing in women's sports and men being put into women's prisons and people wanting to transition kids and try to change their sex because they have a misunderstanding of what sex is and whether it's mutable and whether it's binary. And yeah, so they persist in this delusion, and it has real world consequences. And that's why I try to speak out against it.
And finally, I wanted to ask you about the woke right. Do you think there There's a sort of similar, we're courting similar dangers, perhaps even worse, more serious, with what's coming down the track there. Similar science denial, similar level of commitment to certain delusions, in lack of interest in free and open debate. Does that worry you as a phenomenon?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of contention of what does woke right even mean and stuff like that. I tend to agree with people like James Lindsay online, where it's more of a foundational belief about, you know, you're oppressed by these systemic structures that, you know, they can't really see, you can't really test, but you know, there's these people out there that are oppressing us, and we're finally awake to these oppressive structures, and the only way we can, you know, combat them is to sort of implement our own authoritarian counter-revolution against those things. And I am seeing this happen on the right as well. I think calling it woke right is actually really illuminating, because you can see the similar belief structures, at least, that underlie these things, even though they manifest in very different ways. You know, if we consider wokeness as like a way that it processes information and views sort of conflict and oppressor-impressed groups, you know, you have, if you feed in left-wing sort of premises to this way of thinking, you get left-wing policy prescriptions that we might call woke, you know, trans ideology, queer theory. But if you feed in, you know, right-wing conservative assumptions to it, you'll get different outcomes. But I think we shouldn't be calling the outcome woke. It's woke is kind of the process, the way they're thinking about the information. I think it's useful. It tends to confuse a lot of people, and I don't really particularly care if people use the term or not. I think it's useful if you understand what woke is at a fundamental level. But really, at the end of the day, like the authoritarianism is kind of the main problem. And there's a lot of racist ideas that come out of it as well.
Yeah, it's the against authoritarianism in all its forms is surely something.
Yes, yeah, whatever you call it.
Colin Wright, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Pleasure. Yeah, thank you.